Your body is working overtime. So in a weird way, these hard runs in the heat are helping to build resilience and strength. Be patient with yourself.
Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Today is a rebroadcast of an episode that we did around this time last year, as things really start to heat up. In this episode, we talk with sports nutritionist and runner Jen Saigo about fueling, hydrating, and managing gut distress. Jen works as the official dietitian for several professional and Olympic teams, including the Toronto Raptors and Athletics Canada. This week, she shares her expert advice on how to make the most of your sweltering summer training so that you can reap the rewards during your fall races, even if they're virtual. So let's start with that sort of first main question. You step out the door on a day like today, on the day of recording, it's about 39 degrees in Toronto. And Jen, you and I just both said we got back from our runs and, you know, it's already so hot so early in the morning. It can not only be uncomfortable, but it can become a bit demoralizing through these really hot runs. So let's start by maybe talking about what are some of the main changes that happen in the gut or to the runner's body in those really hot months? What are some of the main considerations when training hard in that summer heat and humidity?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kate. And the funny thing is, I swear I was just thinking about this while I was on my run, because my run was so terrible and it felt so hard. And it's a route that I do all the time and a distance that I'm completely comfortable with at a time of day when I normally run, and everything just felt like lead. It felt so difficult. And I thought, well, this is a lesson in old-fashioned physiology. You know, you've learned this, Jen. You know why this is happening. And I've seen other people posting things like that on social media as well, cyclists and runners both. So basically, when it gets hot, a lot of different things happen. One of the biggest things that changes is that our heart rate will go up. We will be basically working harder at the same intensity or the same speed, same pace as we would have been in cooler weather. And this is especially true if there's a rapid increase in temperature. So in Toronto right now, we've had a series of months in the spring where it was quite cool, unusually so, and then all of a sudden it's gotten really hot and humid. So when that happens, we have to realize that our body is going to take a little bit of time to adjust. So this period of time, we see this high heart rate, we see an elevated perceived exertion. And basically what that means is that everything's going to feel more difficult. And then essentially, for lack of a better word, as our runs go on, you could almost say that our blood, quote unquote, thickens. In other words, things are working, our body has to work harder for our heart to pump blood through to our working muscles, but also to our gut. So that means that if you are doing, say, longer runs or runs where nutrition becomes important, like you're starting to take your gels or your Gatorade or sports drinks, those sorts of runs are going to feel increasingly uncomfortable in the gut and potentially lead to gut distress, quite simply because that body that's working so hard, it's trying to get blood flow to the working muscles, and it's going to deprioritize getting blood flow to the gut to digest food.
Mm-hmm. So that's when we start feeling some of that cramping in the gut. You might find yourself having to run to the bathroom a little bit more, not being able to maybe digest as easily, because I'm assuming there's some increased inflammation in the gut as well. Is that true?
Yeah, all of the above. So you're essentially, again, imagine that you're sort of almost starving the gut or you know, cutting off its capacity to be able to do its job. So you have this stress essentially that's going on. So now you're saying, oh, here's a gel or here's a drink or here's the oatmeal I ate before my run. And you're essentially hampering its ability to handle that. So what you can see is something we call dysmotility, which is essentially a change in the speed in which food passes through the digestive system. And what will happen is you'll get more fluid in the gut, more water, and a faster rate of passage through the gut. In other words, what are we going to end up with? Runner's trots or runner's diarrhea, as we would say. So you'll get sometimes cramping, you'll get an urgency to go. Sometimes it'll be so urgent that you'll just have to stop or you won't be able to continue with your run. But as you were saying, there also are issues with inflammation in the gut. And running itself is quite traumatic to the gut to begin with. So when you really make the gut more stressed and less able to handle the food. You can get more of those inflammatory responses, or we call them sort of gut bleeds that can happen. And so it all can be pretty uncomfortable. It doesn't have to be, and it isn't always. I don't want anybody to panic and go, oh, I shouldn't go outside in this weather. But just to understand, if things feel different in your body at this time of year, that's really, really normal. And you may have to modify your routine or your habits a little bit until the weather cools down.
And so what are some of the recommendations that you have around those modifications that people can make? So obviously things like, what can people sort of change in terms of their diet that can maybe combat this, or any other suggestions that you have around really hot summer training to help kind of battle some of these consequences?
Well, I think the first debate that anybody can have in weather like this is whether or not they would like to do fasted runs or not. So we should walk through that a little bit, the good and the bad of that. So fasted runs, something that's become a little bit more popular. A lot of people have been doing them intuitively forever because they just want to get up and get out and run, and they don't want to bother waiting to digest their breakfast. But now people are using fasted runs sometimes on purpose as a means of helping their body to adapt over time and essentially build a bigger aerobic base in the muscle. It's something that researchers are quite interested in, and we need more data to really be able to say whether fasted runs do produce faster, stronger runners, certainly at the elite level and on down. But for getting speed or aerobic base or any type of performance outcome, a fasted run can just be a bit easier on the gut than if you've had something to eat. Now, if you've never done fasted runs before, then it's something you want to take your time with and ease into, because the big downside of running without any food in your stomach is that the run typically is going to feel a little bit more difficult, especially the longer that it gets. The other thing you tend to sacrifice is the peak intensity. So your capacity to do intervals or sprints, speed ups, fartleks, anything like that, hill training may become more difficult. You may not be able to have the same pace or intensity. But the good side is your gut isn't doing any work. So that's a plus minus decision that each runner will have to make. But if you get out early first thing in the morning and you say, you know what, I'm just going to maybe have a cup of coffee before I go, or some water, and I'm just going to hit the road, then that might be one way that you can ease any potential distress that would come from even eating your normal breakfast, which itself could become more difficult to digest when blood flow is restricted in the gut.
Right. So as you said, people who haven't done fasted runs before, you recommend that they sort of ease themselves into this. Is this something that you would suggest more around maybe those shorter aerobic runs? I'm thinking about folks who are maybe starting to prepare for a marathon. And of course, part of that is learning how to fuel on some of those longer runs. And so that sounds like it could be a bit of a balancing act about when you run fasted, or when you run with a little bit less in your gut, so that you're not having to have the gut work as hard, versus learning to actually have that gut work a little harder to digest some of these gels or sports drinks that people might be taking in for their fueling on a long run.
Yeah, so that, bingo, that's, you're absolutely correct, that the fasted runs usually would be your shorter, as I would call them, weekday runs for most people who are working sort of a Monday to Friday job. It's the ones you get up and you do in the morning and you get out of the way. For the longer runs, which would often be on the weekend, those sorts of runs, it's going to be different. You have to take in some fuel, and that's ultimately what's going to be part of your race plan. So you have to start adapting now to learning how to take that gel and experimenting with different brands or different flavors with or without caffeine, and find the ones that ultimately fit for you that you can trust on the day of the race. So when it comes to that, whether we're using sports drink or gel or chews or some type of candy or sweet, whatever it is that you enjoy, the main thing there is to realize is that if you take a large amount of anything at once, it's going to be harder on your gut. So if you shoot an entire gel at once, it may be on a regular day with, you know, good conditions and enough water, you'd be able to tolerate that. But when you add all the complexities I talked about at the start of the podcast, if you add all of that in and you shoot an entire gel, which gives you about 25 grams of carbohydrate all at once, especially if you don't take much water with it, that's what we call a large bolus of carbohydrates, a large sort of lump of it all in your gut at once. And if you have a gut that isn't able to digest food as well as you'd like, then all of a sudden you can increase the odds of having those cramping, diarrhea, loose stool issues. So the main thing I would say is take your carbohydrate, but take it in small doses at regular intervals on those longer runs or any run where you do need fuel. So it might be better, instead of waiting 20 minutes to take a gel, to take half of it every 10 minutes and be really mindful of taking it with enough fluid, which we haven't even started talking about. But if you take it with some water, it's going to help dilute that, again, that bolus, which will make it a little bit easier to digest. So again, it's something you have to play around with. But if it is really hot, you have no choice but to do your 20-25K run in weather that's really, really hot and humid, just be mindful to, as I always say, start low and go slow.
Great advice. Yeah. And of course, the other thing is that a lot of runners, I think, who train through the summer find is by the time those fall races roll around, it's sort of like shedding these weights, you know, both on your legs in terms of how heavy you felt, but also with the gut. Like maybe you're going to find that you can actually process things a little better as the cooler weather approaches leading into the race.
Absolutely. So this is the toughest part in many ways. It'll actually get easier later on when it's cold and blustery.
So we started touching on hydration there. Of course, we all know that as we sweat more, you know, you become more dehydrated in the hotter months. So let's dig in a little bit to the hydration piece. We talked about how there's maybe some more fluid in the gut when it's really hot. And I find personally, especially if I'm on a fasted morning run, I hate that sort of swishing back and forth feeling in my stomach when I've got a lot of fluid in there. What are your tips around hydration? Would you recommend sort of preemptive hydrating? You know, there's sort of that old theory that by the time you're thirsty, it's too late. What are some of your thoughts around hydration that way?
Yeah, well, I think it's in some ways the hydration story, it's an intriguing one because we have sort of that very classical public sport nutrition dialogue that we've had for years, which is drink lots, don't get dehydrated. As soon as you're dehydrated, your performance is compromised. And we've really been sort of heavy-handed and hammering the idea that we've got to drink, drink, drink. And the reality is the research is a bit more muddy than that. And it isn't as simple as to say, you know, well, if you don't drink anything, then you know, your performance is going to tank and you're putting yourself in danger. Now in hot weather, we have to be really careful, but my point I'm trying to make is that our body can actually tolerate a little bit of dehydration. When we talk about endurance performance, somewhere around 2% of our initial body weight seems to be well tolerated. But importantly, when a run is shorter or it's more of a, say, short burst track work, it seems as though even more dehydration than that, something more in the order of 3% or more, can still be well tolerated and not affect performance. So putting that into mathematical terms for a 150-pound person, that means losing 3 pounds of fluid from sweat, or basically 3 pounds of weight over the course of your run, doesn't seem to negatively affect performance. So all that to say is that if you're feeling like, oh, the sloshy just isn't working for me, or I'm just going out for that quick morning run, you can very easily handle your hydration needs by having a glass of water in the evening before you go to bed, a glass of water when you get up in the morning while you're getting dressed and getting yourself sorted, and then drink when you get back. That for most people is going to be sufficient. When you get into the longer runs, those weekend train runs are so important, then we're going to have to preemptively plan hydration. And I think in these cases, if you really want to get serious about it, it does help to know how much weight you do tend to lose in long runs, because then you can start to predict, okay, I'm doing a 25K and it's 33 degrees outside already with the humidity. I know that I'm someone who crosses the 2% line. So I'm going to have to start sipping. And this is the key thing, is to sip water gradually over time rather than chugging it. As soon as we get into large volumes of water, you're going to have a hard time handling that, especially in this weather. So it's much better to take a few sips regularly. And even if you get close to that 2% line by the end of that long run, so be it. Versus, you know, even if you're doing a little less than you would intuitively, but just to keep that sloshiness from setting in, or just that feeling like nothing's digesting anymore, which can happen in the heat. I'd rather you do that and get close to being a bit dehydrated than to be like just laying back water. And then next thing you know, you're feeling awful and you're throwing up and things get really, really unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned there figuring out more or less how much about body weight you're losing during a long run. Do you recommend weighing yourself pre and post long run to sort of have that baseline established on those hot days?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, if your long runs, if you're training for a 10K and your long runs are 7, 8, 9, 10K, I wouldn't worry too much about that. But for the, those who are going out there in long summer intense runs, and then like I was using that example of a 20 or 25K run or your 30K runs for the marathoners, when you're getting into those distances, if it's hot, I think that it is frankly just good safety to have a sense of how much you do tend to lose. And the reason why I say that is because we do know that there are instances of folks who overhydrate, and it's not likely to happen in these circumstances. But if you don't have a sense of whether you're someone who sweats a lot or someone who sweats a little or how well you rehydrate, you may not really know how hard you have to go in these circumstances. And it is possible to under or overestimate your needs. So if you are interested in trying this, the way to go about it is you need a digital scale, which they're around in abundance these days, a digital scale. You want to weigh yourself with minimal clothing. So ideally, this is a run that happens from home to home. Minimal clothing, void your bladder before you weigh yourself and write it down. And then when you finish your run, make a note of how much you drank during the run, the temperature and the conditions, how long the run was and so on. Void your bladder again and weigh yourself in the same minimal clothing. We don't want all the sweaty clothing involved in this, or else we won't really be able to get a sense of how much is trapped into sweat on our in our shirt and our shorts. And then from there, you can get a sense. If you lost, like I said, on a 150-pound person, more than 3 pounds, then that's an alarm. We have to do a little bit better. And on the other hand, if it stayed within the range, then you should be okay.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. We talked about taking in, you know, enough water, making sure you're not taking in too much water. What about the electrolyte component? How do we sort of approach how much electrolyte should be taking in as part of that hydration process?
Yeah, that's the electrolytes, unfortunately, are probably the toughest one of the bunch. And the reason for that is because our saltiness of our sweat is completely individual. So there's two different factors in sweat. There's the sweat rate and then the sweat saltiness or sweat sodium. And it's different for each of us. So you can be a heavy sweater, but someone who doesn't lose a lot of salt in your sweat, or you can be the exact opposite and lose a ton of salt, but maybe not produce a ton of sweat. And then it can be everywhere in between. So I can't go and say, oh, well, everybody needs to have this much sodium per hour or this much sodium when it's really hot and you're sweating a lot. Unfortunately, you have to kind of learn that about yourself over time. A really simple way that you can get a sense of how salty a sweater you are is if you do see white, chalky salt on your dark clothing in hot weather, then that's a good indication that you may be a salty sweater and you have to be a bit more vigilant with your sodium intake during those long runs. So in essence, let's assume that everybody will need some. Where can we get it from? So it depends on the sports drink or the gel that you're using, but basically you can read your label. Some gels contain no sodium whatsoever, and some contain quite a bit. Other sports drinks contain very little sodium, and some contain a lot. So if you're seeing someone, if you're someone who you suspect is you're a really salty sweater, if you've had a history of cramping, and I want to be clear, cramps are not always because of low sodium or dehydration, but if that's you, then you're probably going to want to gear yourself towards the higher numbers in terms of sodium content in those sport foods that you're going to be consuming. And again, a lot of this can be trial and error. You know, sometimes I use a guideline that if you feel like you're craving salt desperately at the end of a long run, I can remember training for a marathon and all I could think about in the last 5K were French fries. If that sense there is like a desperate need for saltiness, then that may be in and of itself a nice indicator that the foods that you're choosing, the gels, the drinks, need to be higher in sodium content. And believe it or not, that will help you to absorb more water. So when you're struggling to get enough fluid in on those days where it's really hot, changing what we call the osmolarity of what you're consuming, which is basically to say the amount of sugar or carbohydrate or the amount of electrolytes in your drink or in your sport food, could potentially help you to uptake a little bit more fluid out of the gut. So a little more sodium could do you quite a lot of good in situations like this.
I know that some people have a hard time in terms of that gut rot processing things like the more traditional, you know, sports drinks that are really high in sugar, are full of sort of artificial flavors and colors. Are there any other alternative, maybe more natural sources of electrolytes or just sort of hydration methods in general that you might suggest for folks who have a hard time processing those really sort of fake heavy sugar supplements?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oftentimes I'll tell people you can make your own sports drink really, really easily. I often will advise people to use what I call red juices, which is essentially, it could be a pomegranate juice, or it could be a cranberry juice, or a blend with blueberry, raspberry, dark, you know, berries. I often start with those, and I just tell them to blend that with about two parts water to one part red juice. There's more water than red juice. And then add literally a pinch of salt, and you've just made a sports drink. Basically, that's it. Like, you got a $1 billion industry right there. Congratulations. And why I suggest the red juice, people often ask me that, is quite frankly, just because they do tend to be thicker and more syrupy, and they tend to have a higher carb count to begin with. So they do better just from a flavor perspective when they're diluted. I find orange juice when it's diluted tastes a bit weird. But, you know, really, in theory, you could use any fruit juice. The only thing I would caution you, and this is something that we should also bring up when it comes to gut issues, especially in the heat, is some types of carbohydrates are better tolerated than others. There's a really gnarly acronym out there that some of you may have heard called FODMAPs. And I won't even get into what it stands for, but basically it's a family of carbohydrates that are easily fermentable in the gut. Fermentation in the gut, as you might imagine, produces gas and can get things really going and contribute to things like bloating, or in this case, runner's trots or runner's diarrhea. So one of the juices that's really high in these fermentable carbohydrates, it doesn't mean it's unhealthy. It just means it can really potentially contribute to bloating or discomfort, is apple juice. So I generally discourage the use of apple juice. Orange juice is low FODMAP, but like I said, it doesn't dilute all that well. So that's why I tend to go with more of those quote unquote red juices. But everyone has to experiment with what works for them. You can, in theory, use honey and dilute that with water as well. Honey is really high in FODMAPs as well. So that's a bit of a case by case. If you've got an ironclad gut, go for it. Use honey, no problem. But one that is low FODMAPs and is generally well tolerated and is super Canadian is maple syrup. So you can, and this, there's a sort of an industry that's growing in this, making maple syrup gels and drinks. So basically you can take maple syrup and put that into your water, add a couple spoonfuls in a water bottle and a little pinch of salt, and like, boom, there you go. There's your all natural sports drink. And it's, you know, contributing to the Canadian economy. So you're a good person, and all the wonderful things come from that.
Well, and I can imagine as well, that's great because you have that control over kind of experimenting with how much you sweat and how much water you lose, and maybe increasing or decreasing the salt content of your own homemade sports drink, and like in a way that you can't do when you just buy a Gatorade at the store.
Bingo. Exactly. And it's so important to understand, because our tolerance, our sweat rates, our pace, everything is unique. And so it does sort of, it behooves us to customize for ourselves and learn. And it's fun. I think of it as experimentation, not another, you know, annoying thing about running. I think it's part of the fun of it.
So when it comes to not just sodium, but other things that might help prevent or lower the rate of muscle cramps when we're really dehydrated, I imagine things like magnesium, potassium. Are there any supplements that you would recommend people taking? Even I'm thinking sodium tabs have become more popular and you see them in a lot of runner stores. Are there any sort of supplements that you would suggest maybe looking into experimenting with in those hotter months, or do you recommend searching for natural sources of those?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. The cramping story is a really complicated story, but the nuts and the bolts of it is, if we look at what a muscle cramp is, it's essentially our body or our muscle telling us, please stop what you're doing, you're hurting me. And that could be for any number of different reasons. So the view that we've had for a long time is, oh, it's a cramp, it means you're dehydrated. And that's possible. It could be because you're dehydrated. It could be also because you've had too little salt in your body relative to the amount that you've sweat out. Absolutely. But cramps can also occur because of things like training, or then suddenly racing on a very different surface than what our body is used to. It can occur because you changed your shoes. It can occur because the temperature is super hot and your body's just not used to it. It can occur because of a rapid increase in training volume or intensity. Maybe you added in cross training that was new for your body. So again, if we just look at it as a way of your body expressing to you, too much, no, 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 stop. So from there, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot of different questions to answer if we do experience a cramp, and really then asking ourselves, is it actually a nutrition issue, or was it that I did one of the other things that Jen just mentioned? So let's assume though that you did narrow it down. You go, no, everything else is the exact same. I think this is a nutrition issue. Then sodium for sure is your biggest, most obvious trigger. By far, we sweat out more sodium than any other electrolyte. Potassium, yes, magnesium are also players, calcium on a very low level. So, you know, people sometimes say, oh, I need to make sure I take enough magnesium so I don't cramp. There really isn't any evidence that magnesium is going to contribute to cramping during a run. Now, magnesium does play an important role in maintaining healthy muscles in general. So sometimes people talk about restless legs or achy legs or dead legs, especially at night when they're in bed and they feel like their legs are just, you just can't get them to settle down at night. In those cases, I'll often use some type of magnesium supplement or high magnesium foods to be able to bring that sense of dead, achy legs under control. If you're wondering about using a magnesium supplement, this is another one that's important to start low and go slow, because too much magnesium can actually lead to diarrhea. So we're back to the beginning again. It's a great talk today, isn't it? But anyway, because it relaxes lots of things, including the bowel. So you want to start with magnesium. I usually say start with about 200 milligrams of either magnesium citrate, or if you want the more gentle one on your gut, it's called magnesium bisglycinate. And you take that before bed, and you can try 200. You can take it up to 400. I wouldn't really go much higher than that without somebody really supervising you. And if you wake up in the morning and things are just getting way too explosive, then back off the dose. So like I said, it can be helpful, but it can also be potentially problematic. But high magnesium foods are also important to include in the diet, just because magnesium is so critical for so many different things. And one of the biggest high magnesium foods that people don't always realize that's super Canadian are hemp seeds. They're a really, really rich source of magnesium, and runners love their oatmeal, but oatmeal is a pretty low protein breakfast. So this is getting away from what we're talking about today, but I love encouraging runners to put more hemp seeds in their diet, either in oatmeal, or you can put it on your summer salads or in your smoothies. And that, as well as pumpkin seeds, which are another really underappreciated but super awesome food that's also really high in iron. Pumpkin seeds go great on all the same things I just mentioned. I put both hemp seeds and pumpkin seeds in my morning oatmeal, and I love the crunch and nutty taste. And I put the hemp seeds and pumpkin seeds both on my salads too. So there's a couple of ways to get more magnesium in your diet.
So circling back to one of the things that we touched on at the beginning of the episode, we talked about how when it's really hot out, we have that increased heart rate, that increased perceived exertion. So a question I've heard quite a bit is, when you're running in the heat, it feels harder, right? So that's that perceived exertion. So you might be running the same pace that you would on a nice, cool fall day, but it feels like you're working a lot harder. And it sounds like your body actually is working harder. It's not just perceived, but it's actually a real increased exertion. Does that mean that you're burning more calories when you're running at the same pace in the heat?
Well, sort of. In a way, you're burning more calories whenever your body is really out of its normal temperature zone. So very hot and very cold will both increase caloric expenditure, because your body has to work harder trying to regulate its own temperature. So will you actually burn more calories? What will happen more often is, it's not so much that you'll maintain the same pace as normal, is that often the pace will drop. So people will intuitively drop maybe 5-10 seconds per kilometer slower in the heat, maybe more if it gets really bad. So the actual, you know, calorie expenditure becomes about the same, because you offset the slightly lower calorie burn for being a bit slower with the increased work your body's doing to try and regulate the temperature. Now, if you're tough enough and you're able to keep the same, your normal pace up, then you're going to get an even bigger boost in calorie burn. And the same would go if it's very, very cold, because like I said, your body's working so hard, that heart is pumping extra overtime. Like it's almost like you're doing sort of like a threshold run on a tempo day sort of thing. It's your body's just trying really, really hard to keep things under control, and that burns calories.
So in that case, does it make sense that, you know, sometimes we feel a little sluggish in the summer, maybe after your run, you're not quite as hungry as you would be again on that cool fall day? In terms of making sure that you're getting in enough calories, are there any recommendations that you have in terms of your eating patterns outside of just the, you know, hour before the run and the hour after?
Yeah, so I think realizing that appetite does tend to go down in the heat. So if you're someone who, if you're trying to lose weight, if running's a tool for weight control for you, then these can be almost opportunities that we could seize. You know, hey, I didn't feel quite as hungry, so I had a smaller breakfast afterwards. Well, as long as you're still recovering, then, you know, maybe a breakfast that's a bit smaller, you didn't put the banana on your oatmeal afterwards, you're probably going to be okay with that. Where it would be concerning is for our athletes out there who tend to err towards the side of being low in body weight, or who've been restricting calories for quite a long time. And we know female athletes are quite prone to this, and we often see it manifest as stress fractures. And that's something I see a lot in my clinic is female athletes who've experienced a stress fracture in their running, and now they're trying to get back and they're trying to figure out what the trigger was. So in that case, if you're someone who really has to be careful, then you're going to have to take certain steps in this sort of weather to be really mindful about getting some extra fuel in over your day. And simple ways that you can do that is using things like cold calorie containing drinks. And I know culturally we've been so anti-juice and we're trying to get people away from calorie containing beverages. And certainly things like pop, that makes a ton of sense. But there's times when we have to bend the rules a little bit. And when you're struggling to get enough food in and you're hot and you don't want to sit down and eat like a big bowl of pasta, like you're just like, I'm hot and it's gross and I don't want to cook, then this is where you can make yourself like really fun, super cool summer drinks. Like you can make things like a cold green tea with honey in it, to just grab some, a little bit of random good quality carbs while you're sipping. You can make things like juices, but put things like a little bit of soda water in there and make it kind of a spritzer and make it taste fun. You can do all your little infused waters where you add all sorts of little slices of cucumber or citrus fruits or put berries in there. And again, add a splash of maybe pomegranate juice or acai juice. And all of a sudden you're getting a little bit of extra calories and carbs, but you're also hydrating yourself as well. And you're getting some antioxidants, which can help to heal the muscles that get so damaged in this weather as well. So a little bit of liquid calories works really well. But if you're really stuck and you just can't get enough fuel in, the one that I always go back to is just peanut butter. Is just a spoonful of peanut butter. If you feel like you're just like, I just can't be bothered with all the trouble of the eating and the hot and the whatever, but I need fuel. If before you go to bed or in between the meals or when you finish your dinner, a couple spoonfuls of that will pack a lot of extra both calories, you get some good quality fats, you get some fiber. It's not big on carbs, but it can help save the day for someone who's cresting towards underfueling. Well, I think the main thing is just be patient with yourself. I think that we tend to be runners are, I don't know if you are aware of this, type A perfectionist sometimes. And so sometimes there's a sense out there of you do those runs on those hard, hot days and you get kind of mad at yourself. You're like, oh man, you know, look at my pace. And oh man, I even kind of had to stop for a second. I never did. And I went up that hill and I normally clobber it. And today it just was brutal and I must be out of shape. And I just really, really encourage people to understand that what's going on inside your body is working overtime. It's almost like you're carrying something on your back the whole time. So in a weird way, these hard runs in the heat are helping to build resilience and strength for what, like you said, later on, you're almost going to shed that and it's going to feel easier. So understand that practicing your nutrition in these tough conditions, practicing pacing in these tough conditions, practicing hydrating before you get out and after you get back, planning your runs where there are water fountains so that you can stay cool, stay out of the sun if you can. The solar radiation itself can be very draining on a person. The big three factors that are tough in this weather are heat, humidity, and solar radiation. So realize that if you're literally just out in the sunshine, that itself can be really draining. So there's a lot that's kind of going against you at this time of year. And that's why most of the major races don't happen in the summer. So just do your best. Enjoy it. Make it part of the summer. Enjoy jumping in a pool afterwards or having a cold drink. And when we get to the fall, it's going to feel easier and you're going to be tip-top shape for your race.
Thanks so much to Jen for contributing her advice and expertise to today's episode. And thank you for tuning in. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Shakeout Podcast. And check out the latest issue of Canadian Running Magazine with our recent guest, Mo Ahmed, gracing the cover. Get your copy online or on newsstands today. Stay cool and safe, and we'll chat again soon.